Hi, I'm Siggy, born and raised in St. Catharines, Ontario, and now living in the nation's capital of Ottawa.
And I'm Jezzy, born in Manila, Philippines, raised in Toronto, Canada, and schooled all over southwestern Ontario. You're listening to the Halo Halo Podcast, a delicious mix of pop culture and the Filipino-Canadian life.
We at the Halo Halo Podcast acknowledge that our creative project spans these areas and territories and are grateful for the traditional knowledge keepers and elders who are with us today, those who have gone before us, and the youth that inspires us. We recognize the land and benefits it provides all of us as an act of reconciliation, as recommended by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's 94 Calls to Action, and gratitude to those whose territory we reside on, work on, or are visiting. I am podcasting from the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin and Ishbeg people.
And I'm podcasting from the traditional lands of the Huron-Wendat, the Seneca, and most recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River. Sigs, it's our Oscar episode, but before we do that, just a programming note, as we normally publish our main episodes on the first and third Fridays of each month, these are a little bit off because of the leap year, but nevertheless, you'll get all your March episodes soon enough. So at least by March 31st, you will have gotten all six of our different episodes coming up on deck. But yes, back to this episode, episode 611, the Oscars. And that's all that we're just talking about.
This is a treat. We haven't done a focus like this in a long time.
But before we do that, let's get into our pop culture catch up. What have you been up to pop culture wise before we start talking about the Oscars? Recently happened on March 10th.
Why is it that I feel like we haven't seen each other?
Because we haven't.
I feel like we haven't. I do enjoy our past February. I really enjoy those episodes. It's very thoughtful and introspective. But I guess February, we were very, very busy. And now we're back in and we're almost mid-March. So pop culture catch up. There's two things. Now, here's the thing. You've been a gamer. You play games or whatever. Yeah. I normally don't. But I am quite quietly addicted to something called Dreamlight Valley. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't know what that is. Yeah,
my wife was playing it and I was just like, what is that? Dreamlight Valley is a Disney game and it would be like a Disney game Animal Crossing.
Okay.
So in this case, Disney is sort of fractured. It's called Dreamlight Valley and you need to help the characters, which could include like Mickey Mouse, Monsters, Inc., Moana. Yep. You have to either collect food or forage or mine for minerals and just complete little tasks all across the Dreamlight Valley. Now, my wife had bought it and she's been playing it, but I didn't realize since we have a subscription to Apple, we have the Apple Arcade and all the extensions with it. So I just thought, oh, that's sort of weird. And then I started playing it and I would play with it in downtime and just collecting crystals. But it's very similar to Animal Crossing because you can buy food, you can make food, you can buy things.
Right.
There's so many tasks. You need to do this for this and adventures. And I sort of downplayed it, but I totally play that just in random times on my phone when dead time, which is usually not really me, but I'm like, oh, hey, it's a kill. It's called Dreamlight Valley. The other thing that I've been doing, because Delaney and I are going on March 29th to Olivia Rodrigo. Yes. She and I have been listening to Olivia Rodrigo. Like, we found her set list.
Oh, my goodness.
And we're trying to get used to it. Some of the songs, like, Delaney isn't familiar. But I have to tell you something really funny. Now,
tell me.
We know that Olivia's lyrics can be a little explicit, which makes me laugh. And I've given Delaney a lecture like, oh, hey, just so you know, sometimes she uses some words that aren't the best, but just so you know. And Delaney's like, of course, Daddy. We had, I think Driver's License was playing in the car.
Yeah.
And there's that part where it goes to the bridge and it says, I still fucking love you. I wasn't singing, but I heard Delaney so cute. But I really, really love you. So she totally edits the song and it's
she
super cute.
She does the PG version.
Yeah, she does the PG version. Really, really love you. Or even in Deja Vu.
So
like
cute.
we used to do that stuff like anymore or
that.
I can't, what's the other one? And Vampire, she's just this dream crusher. It's really, really cute. Or she'll let the music, she'll won't sing that word, but she sings it. So super excited.
Cute. Yeah.
Moshe Banks, she's like, she got a new pair of jeans and she's all like, we can get a new top. I'm like, sure, you can get a top there. Like, she's super duper excited to go in.
You guys are coming in just for the night or are you staying overnight?
We're in Niagara as of the 26th,
right.
And she and I are going to take a GO train and stay at Uncle Danny's,
right,
at his condo, and then we're going, because it's Good Friday, is the concert.
Right.
I know, it's such a weird space. It's a Good Friday, and then we have to head back the next morning because it's my mom's birthday.
Right.
And we're in Niagara, so she's really like, we're going to go on the GO train, and she's like, oh my God, this is great. I'm like, it'll be super fun, and I'm like, oh my God.
Super fun, yeah.
But I mean, I'm like, oh my God, I'm a dad taking my daughter to a concert.
Yeah, it's her first concert. How amazing is that, right?
Even though, listen here, It's Olivia Rodrigo. I mean, you know, the tickets were reasonable or whatever, but Dylan's like, you didn't get any tickets for Taylor? I'm like, no, I did not get tickets for Taylor because no one got tickets for Taylor.
Or you had to pay lots of money for the Taylor.
Lots of money. But she's like, I really like her. I'm like, well, you can really like her again because we rented the movie and it's going to be on Disney Plus. So go
that's
ahead.
That's right.
Knock yourself out.
Enjoy that as much as you can.
And then she sort of grinned. She's like, no, I'm sure Olivia will be great. I'm like, good. Thank you.
Oh, she'll be fantastic. Yeah. But what I want to know is, have you set aside money for the merch? That's the real question.
Emily and I talked. I already looked at the merch ahead of time. Like, she's going to get like probably a $60 or $70 shirt. I get it.
Yeah.
I'm all good. But like on her Christmas present, she got a Deja Vu bracelet that's silver. And it says, do you get Deja Vu? So she'll wear that. I sort of like it because I don't care much for like the opening band. I don't really know them. So we can just go in, she can get her popcorn, drinks, and then we can just go. And she only has two albums out, right? So it's not going to be like a long concert. We have this set list. And Delaney's so cute. She's like, do you think she might do that cute song from High School Musical, the show? I'm like, oh no, honey. This is like rock. Like, no. I don't think she will.
Right. Rock concert for sure. That's her vibe. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, what about you? What pop culture catch up? What have you been up to? Have you seen anything recently?
Yeah, actually, two things. The first that I need to tell you about is on Saturday, March 9th, Joe Coy was in Toronto.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so we got to see him for my sister's birthday. So that was really fun.
Oh, wonderful.
He was so funny. And he loves Toronto. All he kept talking about is like the fun people are in Toronto. So much so that he went overtime. Like, you know,
I think that's worth it. It's worth it when they go overtime.
He went overtime and you could tell he was trying and testing out jokes on us because we were such a receptive type. And we did karaoke with Joe Coy. What he couldn't get over was how everyone knew the 90s R&B songs that that he was playing and stuff like that. And so he would kind of like instruct his DJ to kind of zero out the vocal and people would just be singing along. And he was just floored. He was totally floored. He had a great time in Toronto and he had some really great messages. And I think a lot of subtle messages around the Golden Globes and his hosting, although he never referenced the Golden Globes, he just kept talking about the importance of needing to make fun of yourself and be okay with laughing at yourself. He would kind of heckle people in the audience, you know, and at the same time, he'd be like choosing people saying like, look at this person. This person's just laughing. And they're being in the moment. They're not worried about what anybody thinks. We shouldn't be worried. And we should be able to like make fun of ourselves, laugh at ourselves, lighten up basically is what he was saying. And then he talked a lot about kind of like crabs and sharks and how we have to be dolphins. And I think I've said that on the podcast sometimes before too, right? That we got to be dolphins instead of sharks, and totally talked about how people will try to bring you down. You know, likened it to social media and all of that stuff. And he was like, don't pay attention to it, you know? So, I mean, clearly he's doing well. He practically sold out the Scotiabank Arena.
He's done well. Yeah, he's done very well. The thing. So, but this is the audience. They're coming to see him. They want to see him.
Yeah, they want to see him.
My first question was like, did he sort of mention the Globes? But I think that's classy what he did.
Yeah, he didn't have to mention the Globes. He just talked about it without having to talk about it. You can tell that's classy. The first opening parts of his act were all about like, you know, if you can't laugh yourself, because that was the major thing that came out of the Golden Globes, that his response and his narrative was, you know, I was just telling jokes and I took this job at like the last minute. But yes, it's still his responsibility, but you got to laugh at yourself. And everyone was just too serious at the Golden Globes. And I would agree. I would agree with him.
Exactly.
What was your other question?
90s music. Now, here's the thing. He always, and he loves his Boyz II Men. I do too. Because he gets to those like those bridges and on Bended Knee and all stuff. Yeah. So what 90s music did he play?
Yeah, he had like Boyz II Men, End of the Road, Casey and JoJo, All My
Casey
Life,
and JoJo. Yeah.
TLC, awesome. No Scrubs.
Oh, perfect. That's our music. Yeah,
it was
exactly.
All totally 90s R&B music. But Sigs, it was so interesting watching this in contrast to when I saw him at the Meridian Center, formerly the Sony Center for the Performing Arts. And at the Meridian Center, that holds like roughly 2,000 people. The Scotiabank Center obviously holds 16,000 to 18,000, depending on it's staged. What was fascinating was thought, oh my gosh, we're going to see a lot of Filipinos. We did see a lot of Filipinos, but there was quite a mixture of people.
That's good.
Interesting. Yeah. And he wasn't relying on all of his Filipino jokes and having fun at the expense of his mom. you know? And so
he's evolving. Yeah.
He's evolving, and his humor is a little bit more than that. And, you know, he focused on social media, the toxicity of social media. He talked about, you know, needing to find better people to be around. He talked about healthy masculinity in the sense of trying to make sure that millennials these days and Gen Z folk need to respect people and respect their elders. And, you know, so it was kind of great. I mean, he contrasted it with his son. It was really quite enjoyable. And he went for almost like over 2 hours, actually. You know,
you got your money's worth. That's good.
We totally got our money's worth. We saw two other comedians beforehand, but he was totally on it and he was in the zone and was just having a fun time with us. And I think it's because like we were a relaxed crowd and like totally boogieing it up with him. And the interesting part was there were all these signs about like how you couldn't take pictures and stuff like that and videos.
Oh, okay.
But during the karaoke section, you know, of the night, like people were doing their like flashlights and stuff like that. So like I felt sorry for the ushers because you couldn't like tell people to.
No, not.
No, of course not. Right. And especially since Joko was encouraging us, but it was a fantastic comedy show. And, you know, I have to say, I haven't seen a comedy show in the Scotiabank Center. You know, I can't even remember seeing a comedy show in the Scotiabank Center. I'm usually seeing it at some place like the Meridian Hall,
the smaller
hall. It's like somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 or 4,000 people. So it was incredible to like be sitting with 20,000, close to 20,000 people laughing together all at once. And he just talked about the magic of humor and laughter and how that might make the world just slightly a better place. And I thought that
I'm so glad he's back on the horse. Just continue.
Totally.
Good for him.
Totally.
Good for him.
Joe Coy's world tour. The other thing is, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in another episode for this month of March, of course, is the Vegas shows that I had seen Madonna in. But I did catch RuPaul's Drag Race live.
And what was that like?
Oh my God. I had like second row seats. It was
Where was it playing?
It was at the Flamingo Theater.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Yeah. It was totally in the Flamingo Theater. And it was like Wayne Noonan's old theater or something like that. It was fantastic. And I saw Derek Barry totally impersonate Britney Spears. And like for a moment there, it was like, that's Britney, bitch. And then Lawrence Chaney, winner of UK Drag Race, was also in it. Diabetti was in it. You know, they rotate the cast every so often. And Georges was also in it. Yeah, so they had some of my favorite drag queens there. And so thoroughly entertaining. Asia O'Hara was also the host of it. Fun to see, lots of lip syncing and just kind of going through the show and emulating the show. It was well worth like, you know, the $150 that I paid to kind of get in to see that.
Oh my gosh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. And then the last thing that I got to tell you before we get into Oscars 2024, which is that I met one of the chief stews on a motor yacht that goes out of Miami. And I was seated next to her. And it was like, you know what, well... So she hasn't starred on any of the Below Deck franchises, but a lot of the people that are on there like were her first stew or her third stew, right?
So
and it was just so interesting talking to her and her husband who was also a cook, and it was just hilarious because I was just kind of like, "Oh my God, tell me more about, you know, your lives and stuff like that." So now I have an invitation to go out to Miami before June. You know, I'll get a personal tour on the motor yacht before they head back to Australia, which I think is where, you know, one of them is originally from. I think the other person, I think Jess is from South Africa, if memory serves me correct. Anyways, it was quite a trip to Las Vegas. Those couple of things that occurred. And then, you know, stay tuned for my debrief and deconstruction of the celebration tour, Vegas style VIP edition. And then I can just kind of like tell you.
That is a taste test. That is going to be an extended taste test.
Yeah.
I think that's
so from that celebration to this celebration of Oscars and film excellence and stuff like that. Oh my gosh, 2024. It seems so strange to be seeing this Oscars. Simply because, do you remember when we had that kind of like Rail House theater Oscar where
in a train station almost? Yes.
It was interesting, but it was just like they had to do that and it was good enough for that. But it was kind of nice to see it kind of come back to true to form. And so it was just kind of fun to see. And oh gosh, 7th start time. Like,
listen, 7 o'clock was great for us because how many times was I going traveling from St. Catharines to Toronto to watch it with you and then have to leave at like midnight. And it didn't drag. Like, I liked it from 7 to 10:30 and watched Abbott Elementary. I thought the timing was fine. I literally told Emily, I'm like, the kids can either be on their tablets or they can watch with us.
It seemed reasonable.
You know, all the LA people are annoyed because it's 4 o'clock their time. But I mean, you'll get to eat sooner. They're probably hungry.
Yes, because they were always hungry and they always have to have snacks in their pockets and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk about the red carpet. What did you think of the red carpet?
Okay. I didn't watch any of the pre-show stuff, but I saw stuff in the stream. So here's the thing. I'm all about the shimmer and sparkle. That's what I saw.
There was a lot of shimmering and sparkling going on.
Like Lily Gladstone, since I'm so pro her, America Ferrera, in pink.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And Anya Taylor-Joy, I loved because I was like, wow, that's... And I'm not ignoring, there's a lot of other people that popped up. I'm like, whoa, but those are the three women that look great. That
you really loved, yeah.
Exactly. Now... But I have to say, for the men, I love this phase of fashion at the moment. You could be wearing bow ties, no ties. But if you look at everyone's pants, all comfortable, that fucking skinny jeans, skinny pant leg is over. Even my man RDJ winning, he had like a nice tuxedo pant, but it was like a nice big leg cut out. They looked comfortable. Even like Ryan Gosling, Simu Liu, like simple, no tie. It just looked, they looked comfortable. It was great. It's just...
The pandemic influence. That's all I got to say.
I think so. That's about it. What did you see? And you have an observation, which I'd like us to dive into. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. But before I get into all of that, I just have to say, you know, I liked a lot of the fashion. I had a bit of trouble with Emily Blunt's over-the-shoulder strap.
Yes. This...
It was a bit odd for me. And it was like, oh, is this supposed to be kind of like off the rack type of commentary? But I was just like, what is going on? With all of this.
Then when you saw her sitting down, it looked like it was like a Lego piece like hanging over.
It totally looked like that. And I was like, what is going on? This is not a good look. That's all I thought.
She usually excels. But if you look at the post-Oscar party, she changes into an amazing dress.
Yeah. And it was like, why weren't you wearing that? I get that it was shimmery, but her Oscar dress, I wasn't too thrilled about it. And when she was... up there on stage presenting, it was like it was distracting for me.
I think it's because we expect much from her. But here's the other thing. Now, my wife goes, "What's wrong with Emily Blunt?" I go, "That dress." She goes, "No, she looks very unhappy." I go, "I think she's fine. There's no issues with her and John." I'm like, "No, what are you talking about?" She's like, "No, I don't. No, my wife Emily, who's super like not in the seat, but she's like, no, I don't think Emily Blunt's happy." I'm like.
She's uncomfortable in that dress.
And that's exactly it. I told my wife, she probably had to stand in a car.
Yeah.
In one of those vans.
She probably did. She probably had to go on a bus.
That's why it was all stiff and hold on to the railing. While John was all comfortable in his white suit, he could have laid
down. Yeah. But I did not appreciate that, you know. But speaking of the other dresses, though, kind of as you were saying, shimmery, shining, iridescence was certainly the theme. And if it was silver and shimmery, it was it. And I just love some of the stuff. Like Divine certainly had like a beautiful shimmery dress. America Ferrera's dress was also really shimmery. It was all these kind of like pinks and ice blues and ice.
Yes, light.
Light and iridescent is kind of how I would frame it. Or shimmery and silver is probably what I would frame it. And pink was certainly the color for this award season. So again, America Ferrera's and Daya. And I also saw kind of like that theme of peplum that was kind of going around. So of course, Emma Stone's dress that of course she broke. And then Lupita Nyong'o's dress too with the feather peplum. That was really fun to see. But I think the trend that I really enjoyed, and I've been seeing this kind of come through, and like for our Canadian listeners out there, especially if you have a Simon's store near you, check out brooches. Like the men's brooches were everywhere. And it was like clearly the stylists all called each other and said, we're all going to have our men.
Let's make this happen.
Yeah, it totally was.
Brooches
right?
are going to happen.
Totally was. And in some ways, I felt like I was back in the 80s, except a little bit more pared down a la Chanel. Because in the 80s, there were a lot of men's brooches, but then you got a lot of other jewelry with it. And it kind of got lost. This time it was just like one or two brooches right near the lapel. It was really fun. People got to express their personalities in different ways. And so it was just like, oh, I think that's we're going to see that for the next couple of years to come.
Subtle accessory.
Doesn't need to be a boutonniere, but it was just kind of fun. It was just kind of fun. So that's kind of what I thought in terms of the red carpet looks this year. Shimmery, iridescent. Pink was a big color. I love the brooches. Love that the brooches for all the men.
A subtle accessory that should be, that's a chapter in a book or something. Or,
I think so. I think
or a play that you and I are going to write. Okay.
At some point.
Now, let's go to hosting. And I like to say, with respect, Jimmy Kimmel was awesome about Joe Coy because he's like, he deserves another chance.
Yes.
He did say that. That wasn't fair. Just give him another chance. Yeah. That's why, first off, I was like, oh, Jimmy, you're so sweet. But you know what? He's fine. He was like a bartender. You know what? People like different types of drink. He'll serve the drink. He did his job. I don't think I didn't expect anything crazy or anything, but like no. He went there, he served well. He knew that he was starting early. I mean, he's also one of the producers with his wife, yes, Molly McCarron, which is great. So they really understood, this is what I'm going to do. Let's get on stage. Let's not have anything crazy because of last year's the slap. But, you know, it was just, it was all good. I am shocked. I thought it was a bit when he read the tweet from Trump. I literally thought it was a bit. It was real. I'm like, wow. And it just exposed it. And I think I don't know if the producer said, don't read that. And he's like, no, I'm going to read it. Like,
read it. It was exactly. Good that he did.
I'm just like, I totally thought it was a bit until after. I'm like, oh, that wasn't a bit. That was,
no, it was real.
That was it. Yeah. And I love that he gave a union shout out. After such a year, I was like, I would think of you. I was like, oh, he's probably like, all right, union.
Loved it. That's right. Loved it when he took that too.
I mean, the directors, they folded, but I mean, hey. But he was just great about it. And it was a year, right?
So. And I think the entertainment industry is at a crossroads here, contractually speaking, in terms of their employment conditions. And I think the unions needed to hold out. And we're in some industrial unrest times. And I think
that's exactly it. Yeah.
That's right. And so good for Jimmy just kind of calling out the unions and giving them a shout out and stuff like that. But yeah. I think for me, Jimmy was Jimmy. And I didn't think I expected anything different. I wanted him to be, as you had kind of described him, as kind of trying to meet everybody's needs. And I think that he did. And I think sometimes that's the brief for the Oscars, that there's a lot of needs to be met and that you have to be almost kind of bland enough to satisfy everyone, but funny enough, just enough so that people appreciate it and still have a good time. And I think the smart part about Jimmy when he hosts is that he relies on the presenters to do the stunting, right? He doesn't have to do
that's true.
Stunting.
That's true.
You know, because sometimes, let's say Whoopi Goldberg, she was doing all like the costume changes and she was relying
that was great. Yeah.
To do that. But I think for Jimmy, he's like, he knows what he's there for. He's there for transitions and that major stunts can be done by the performers themselves or the people that are talking about the nomination. So I kind of appreciated that. Kind of essentially took the spotlight off of him and put it on everybody else, which I thought was really good. And yes, I kind of forgot about the early start time. And I was I was ending dinner at a restaurant and suddenly it was like,
oh my God,
Oscars. And it was like, okay, we got to get the bill. And we got to run home, right? To go watch this and stuff like that. And it's like, why is the red carpet on right now? And so anyways, saw it. And then I was also time chasing it too on my Rogers. And so I was able to kind of catch it, but it did catch me by surprise. And it felt like it ended on time.
Ended minutes right before 10:30. Like they had time to put on the credits. And even the thing where they even explained on how you vote for Oscars.
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, they actually have time for this because Abbott Elementary started sharp at 10:30.
Amazing.
I thought, bravo. I don't care what you are doing it. And freaking Abbott Elementary killed because if you don't watch it, what was great in Abbott Elementary in their cold open, Bradley Cooper was on the show as himself.
I did not see it. Yeah.
It was great because they said, what do you have for show and tell? Well, this guy was across the street and Bradley Cooper comes in. They're like, oh my God, it's Bradley Cooper. And the best part is they totally had the teachers going, oh, you're a movie. You're an Oppenheimer. And they all get it wrong. He goes, no, I wasn't in that. And the other character goes like, everybody's an Oppenheimer. You're not in that. Like, no, he's in this movie. It was super funny. And they made fun. And then even Bradley Cooper, he poses for a picture with the teachers. And he said, you do know that in Philadelphia, you guys are the most underfunded schools. And there's a need for this. And you can see the quote, we know. Can we just take the picture? We're all good. And I was like, it was a feat of mastery.
That's fun.
It was fun. Well, good super funny.
Or the flow over into Abbott Elementary. And Michael and I have just started to get into it. So I can't wait to kind of talk to you a little bit more into it. We're almost finished season one. But oh, that's fantastic. I have to say, the joke at the end of the Oscars was
with Matt Damon
saying, let's all line up to make a speech and stuff like that. I just thought, oh, hilarious, 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 hilarious. Yeah. So well executed, well delivered, very much enjoyed the hosting. Sometimes you just don't need big beats of stuff, right? You just need a monologue.
A good host. Yeah.
You know, and then people kind of keeping the show moving along and being able to make commentary at the same time. So
I think Tina Fey was on Last Call to Reaches with Bowen Yang and Matt Rogers. And she had said on hosting shows at the end, you just got to move on, reintroduce yourself with what he did. She goes, a majority of people at the end of the award show have lost. They're right. Done. So they're just done. Go out. And he served it. Like, he served it really great. They're smooth. We're on time. Here we go. Let's go. And people got to watch the credits where, oh, the Oppenheimer crew were just on stage, milling about, congratulating. You see people getting ready to leave. Yeah. You see Lily Gladstone go over to Martin Scorsese and give
him
a hug.
Like,
wow. It was great. There was no rush and, like, fast little hit. It was wonderful. It wasn't like, and I wasn't yawning or anything because
it kept going. It kept going for sure.
Maybe it's because we're getting older, Kuya. Maybe.
It could be that. And because we appreciated the early start time. Exactly. Now, I have to say, in terms of the delivery of the awards, I'm so glad that they came back to the presentation of the acting awards, you know, where they had past winners give basically love letters, flowers, and love speeches to all the nominees. And it really felt heartfelt, sometimes funny, but certainly sincere. And oh my goodness, for Divine Joy Randolph, like, I just about was weeping alongside her, you know, when she was getting her nomination speech read to her. And it made it really seem true when they say that it's an honor to be nominated. It truly became a congratulatory moment just to get there. And then it was just kind of fun to see the winners kind of come up and then shake everyone's hand, kind of like, congratulations and welcome to the club in some way. Loved it. Sigs, you and I have talked about this each year. I always love this form of delivering the awards, as opposed to just like last year's winner giving it to next year's winner or whatever the case may be. I think that this makes it all worthwhile. And then you see people's emotions, like, you see people's emotions kind of come through, because you know that there are people up there on the award stage that knows exactly how hard it is to kind of put on that type of performance in a lot of ways.
This is my favorite part. And I know you and I texted each other about it. Mm-hmm. The time that I do remember them doing this was 2009. That was 15 years ago when Hugh Jackman hosted. Yeah. Now, this thing about, there's really good things about this. There's some bad things. And I'll mention the good things first. Now, when they did in 2009, do you recall that Anne Hathaway was nominated for supporting actress in Rachel Getting Married? In the opening of the show with Hugh Jackman, she sings. And Shirley MacLaine was the one that presented her nomination, saying, Anne, this is an amazing role that you did, Rachel Getting Married. Very serious. And guess what? You sing. I don't think this will be the last time you're here. And what did she do? Mm-hmm. She won Best Supporting Actress for Les Miserables, for a musical.
Yeah, she did.
So it was so poignant. I loved seeing all the actors up, whether it was Nicolas Cage going, well, hell yeah, I get like a blind eye too, putting on a contact and laughing.
Totally, that was so great.
Everyone smiling and saying thank you and cheering them. It's great. What was wrong with Jennifer Lawrence?
She was a bit wooden.
And I was just, she was very muted.
She was.
And I thought usually she's like goofy and she's laughing. She's
animated, you know.
Yeah, and she's wearing a polka dot dress. So I was like, oh, she's wearing something different. And she was very muted. And Lily Gladstone deserved, like, thank God for Emma Stone being a class act, saying, I share this with you. I am so glad. But she was a little bit wooden. I still love it. I still love it. I think you and I, if we're in the same room, we're like, oh my God, what are they going to say? What are they going to say? Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. And whether it's Rita Moreno singing America.
She sang West Side Story because she sang America.
And it's Latino representation. Amazing. The only thing that I missed, though, and it's wonderful for everyone to get their flowers and Giamatti and everything, is just that you don't really get to see the scene that they get nominated for.
Yeah,
right?
That's the only thing.
But still, when I saw that, I'm okay with that
because it's more about the speech that they're getting from a fellow colleague, fellow actor, and winner. And so, and then just saying, like, I see you. Like, you know, when Brendan is like, I see you. Like, I know the hard work that you've put into it. I certainly enjoy that type of award delivery, and I hope that they continue to do that in like future seasons to come and stuff like that.
And when Divine won, did you see Giamatti, who's doing a Sterling K. Brown tear? Like a big fat tear on his cheek.
Yep, yep.
I was like, oh, yeah. And if you haven't heard, Divine's message was just like, I was told just to be different when I realized I can just be myself.
I just have to be myself.
I was like, that message is perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. There was a lot of really poignant things, whether, oh my goodness, the documentary.
Oh, yes.
So serious. The Ukraine journalist saying, I wish I didn't have to make this movie, but
yeah.
History captures feelings and we need to acknowledge this. Or Cora Jefferson, who wrote American Fiction, was just like, it's great to make $20 million. Can we make bankroll, you know, $4 million films?
Right.
Several of them, so everyone has a chance. That's what we need. And John Glazer, like, talking about Zone of Interest. And it was really meaningful. There weren't any very many surprises, per se, but there was meaningful speeches.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. You're bringing an X point, and I really want you to bring this up because I feel the same way about it. So go ahead.
My only critique of the entire night,
yes,
or negative critique of the entire night, was the In Memoriam. I don't know what you think, but when I think about In Memoriam, like, I kind of think about that Kenny G moment where he's like with this lone saxophone, kind of like trumpeting away. I don't know about you, but I don't know that I see dancing during a memoriam.
The music was good. Yeah.
The music was great. And it was nice to see Andrea Bocelli and his son and all of that stuff. I think that's all you needed. You didn't need the dancers in the background.
Yeah.
I don't think you needed that. And then at the end, when there was a flash of names.
We couldn't even see it. We couldn't like,
then
even
don't
see
put
it.
The flash of names up.
No,
you know, or move through the montage that much more faster. I was just a little bit annoyed with that because, in as much as it's like it's an extended pee break for some people, you know, these are people that have put their lives into
and
this
died.
Industry and died, and so we should at least pay them with respect. Now, sometimes it's kind of like, okay, you're part of the Producers Guild. Yes, we're going to recognize you. Oh, yes, you're this person. You're the production assistant, but yes, we're going to, but they still all made a contribution. And I just thought to myself, just a flash of names at the end. Oh,
that wasn't good.
Plus, we
were zoomed out on camera.
Yeah, totally. So you couldn't even see who they were. You couldn't see who the 40 names that they couldn't be bothered to kind of like somehow put images to. And I think that they could have, they had time for it, you know,
they had more than enough time and they could have, or put a ticker tape. Or something. You know what I mean? Ticker tape, like a crawl and a Chiron. At the bottom.
It's not that hard. No, I don't think it was hard. If they had a Chiron on the top, you know, that said like production or sound design or, you know, performance.
And then flash slow. Smooth, like continual.
Yeah, we could totally have gotten.
This is our other Emmy.
Yeah, no, yeah. It would have been our other Emmy for visual design and graphics or something like that.
Production for the Oscars.
Yeah, production. Yeah, totally. For the In Memoriam.
In Memoriam section.
And Jesse, yes.
Oh, my God.
But let's talk about probably what I thought was one of the highlights, which was I'm Just Ken. I love the mishmash of cultural properties. Oh my gosh, Sig.
Did you think Madonna Material Girl? As soon as I saw him in pink, well, and all the guys with the thing, I'm like, this reminds me of, well, I mean, it's Gentleman Prefers Blonde.
Gentleman Prefers Blonde. But it was funny because that was the first thing that Michael said. He says, oh, is that Material Girl? It's Gentleman Prefers Blonde. It was that meets Ken, meets a mosh pit. And I just thought, wow. And then like the holding of hands. And I just thought, oh, this is what like healthy masculinity could be. It doesn't take itself so seriously and yet has a lot of fun with it. And so it was just fantastic. And I think it's going to go down as one of these performances that you'll never forget. It's just unfortunate it didn't win. Mark Ronson and company did not end up winning the Grammy. The Oscar. I mean, I'm happy with Billie Eilish winning the Oscar for the Barbie movie. At least Barbie won something. But I thought that this certainly was incredible. An incredible performance.
It took down the house, even for him to start. Here's the thing. That guy had a great job playing that role because even being second place, you see Margot Robbie laughing and he was just like giving a bit of a sneer, like I'm sitting behind you. Mm-hmm. And then you just see from Slash to Wolfgang. Well, I don't know if people realize like Wolfgang Van Halen was playing guitar with Slash too.
Yeah, I saw that too.
You saw the Ken boys, like Kingsley Benadire, Simu Liu, Scott Evans, Nekushi Gatwa.
And it looked like a big mosh pit, right?
And
like
they were having fun. And then singing, totally like everyone was enjoying. The karaoke was on the screens, like to make everyone sing.
Sing along.
What did he do? He gave flowers to Greta Gerwig. Like, you sing. And then kissed her. Like, I was like, this is what it's all about. And I think even Greta Gerwig was caught. Like, I think Vulture just said behind the scenes, it's like, that made my night. That was my... a war. She was just a pro, like, yeah, throughout, yeah, 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 all this.
Because it was, in as much energetic as I appreciate Oppenheimer, I do think that Barbie will probably have the bigger cultural impact in decades to come. I think people will be studying that, and then they'll look at this performance and then they'll think, wow, like,
why not
look at this, right?
So. Exactly. Or you're gonna have many people going, how do we get that? How do you get a stall out musical number that, like, pushes that, those boundaries,
totally,
to the old school of singing in the rain, that goes into a ballet, that goes into, like,
yeah,
rock,
totally,
it goes, it brought back a different type of movie making. Like, it
totally
just
did. It totally did. I agree with
you. It was wonderful. I think you noticed some stuff. Uh-huh. Did you notice, like, the subcontext programming throughout the whole? It was pretty blatant before with the Oscars, but the pairings of individuals. So, for example,
totally.
When you had Michael Keaton and Catherine O'Hara, guess what? Beetlejuice is coming out in the
That's
fall.
That's right.
And then
you got Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo.
Yes, and I mean, come Wicked. On.
Yep, the musical coming out in the fall too. Or
exactly.
December and stuff like that. Totally. You could tell that they were preparing us for the next year's movies and let's get all these people and stuff like that. Yeah.
How the hell? Ariana Grande was on Saturday Night Live performing live the night before. And she got her sweet little butt out to California the next day.
Well, you, like, know she was on a private plane.
She must have a private plane to get. Okay, go take one drink at the after party. Then you got to go. Because I was like, how the hell did she do that? Like, beyond to get there.
Yeah.
But what was great, it was the banter between the stars of The Fall Guy, a stunt movie.
Yes.
Being Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling,
yes,
who did
yes.
a fantastic little send-up of their rivalry this summer. I thought it was great.
I love that it's rivalry so on Oppenheimer and Barbie and stuff like that. That was fantastic. They had such great chemistry. You can see them kind of working well together.
Absolutely.
For their upcoming film. The only other thing that I would want to comment on in terms of this Oscars was I'm always looking for a standout speech moment. And of course, there are always those heartfelt ones. But the one that I actually really appreciated a lot was Robert Downey Jr. thanking his childhood. And I just thought, oh, and then hearing it up at the end where he just looks to Susan, his wife, and just says, you know, she loved me back to life. And I just thought, oh, it just kind of tells me everything that I know about Hollywood, which is to play a person who is not yourself and to devoid yourself of your identity to then take on an acting persona. What kind of childhood do these individuals have suffered through? And in as much as it was funny, I'm also sure that it was probably very truthful at the same time. And yet they give us joy. They create emotions for us. They tell us art. They tell us, you know, where we need to put our values in and appreciate it. And so there was something very poignant, even though it was funny, when Robert Downey Jr. thanks his childhood in terms of winning his award.
I think we've seen him go through, like, we've seen his arraignments
yes.
in court. And then remember, like, people giving him a chance, whether it's Heart and Souls, and all of a sudden, oh, he's on Ally McBeal.
Yes.
Oh, he is one of the figureheads for Marvel Studios.
Yes.
Oh, he has gone out and talking about philanthropy, a big philanthropist. What do you do after your Iron Man? I guess I'll do the supporting role because he wants to work with Nolan. And look at that. He got his flowers.
Look, he's got his
30 years after he got nominated for Chaplin. So I thought it was lovely and he was very kind and his wife is amazing. So
amazing.
It's a great notable speech.
Ooh, well, what an Oscars 2024. Sigs, I hope the schedule lands again well enough for us to maybe review next year's Oscars, where a best casting category will be coming out. So that'll be interesting for us to kind of watch and see.
We will be cracking it down and hopefully we'll be watching it together.
Yeah.
It'll be great. Folks, great. We want to hear what you thought about the Oscars. We hope you enjoyed this episode, Pop Culture Induced, and we're getting back on track to deliver some great episodes this month. Email us at hollahollopopculture@gmail.com. The Holla Holla Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, leave a review, tell your friends about us. We're on social media. You can find us on Instagram at hollahollopopculture.
Finally, we receive editorial feedback from Mary Beth Badian. Our musical theme is by Chelch Ringen. We'll see all of you again real soon.
See you guys soon.